Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
A government shutdown would have huge implications.
How would it affect the economy, everyday people, foreign aid?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for checking out the podcast from marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, April 6th.
Coming up, Dish Network makes it a blockbuster night.
Criminals, beware of realtors packing heat.
And later, even in our sour economy, pet owners are still going gangbusters on Rover and Sox.
All that's just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Time is running out on negotiations to avoid a government shutdown. Now, lawmakers have yet to agree on tens of billions of dollars in cuts to the budget for the rest of the current fiscal year. This is 2011 fiscal year. President Obama will meet again with negotiators today, although House Speaker John Boehner's office said this morning he has no plans to meet with the president.
Let's get analysis now on what a government shutdown would mean for all of us ordinary people outside of Washington. Richard DeKayser is an economist with the Parthenon Group. He joins us now, as he does every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So if there is a government shutdown, it seems like the key words in terms of what stays open and what shuts down are essential and non-essential. Explain.
Well, three classes of workers are defined as essential. Those who provide national security, so that's basically all the armed forces. Those who pay benefits, Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, for example, as well as those who are responsible for protection of life and property, so federal prisons, for example. Those people would stay on the payroll, they'd continue to work, and the Postal Service, which is entirely self-financing, is also exempt, so you'll continue to get the mail. If we look back at 1995, when we had a brief shutdown,
right,
about 30% of federal workers were furloughed.
And what about non-essential, Richard? What does get shut down?
Well, we've got the parks, of course, and the Smithsonian Museum, so people who are planning to visit those locations will be shut out.
What about the IRS, Richard? That's we're in tax time.
We are. You can continue to send in your payments, but they will not be processing refunds during that time. So, again, here's a class of important activity. Last time around, again, in 1995, about $400 million supposedly was not received because of these workers not being on the job to do that.
Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group, thanks for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, a government shutdown will affect a lot of federal agencies, as Richard said, here at home, and a lot of programs that affect foreign aid, passports, and the visa process as well. Marketplace's Gregory Warner joins us with the details on that. Good morning, Gregory.
Hi.
What kind of foreign aid are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, anything from building schools for girls in Afghanistan to training police officers in Iraq to combating HIV/AIDS in Rwanda, all of it could be affected by a shutdown. The larger question is, though, what is going to happen to foreign aid in these budget negotiations? Because according to a Gallup poll, foreign aid is the only piece of the budget that a majority of Americans agree should be cut. Shutdown or no, the fate of a lot of foreign aid is uncertain.
All right. So how else would a shutdown have a global impact, Gregory?
Well, as you said, all kinds of document processing the government does on a daily basis. I mean, visas, passports, licenses for import-export businesses. I called Stephen Davies. He's an economic historian at the Institute for Economic Affairs in London, and he remembers what this meant in the 1990s.
The last time that there was a shutdown, it led to a significant delay in any sort of procedural documentation that required applying to an agency of the federal government would basically just not happen while the shutdown was in place.
So overseas businesses, especially ones that depend on quick government approvals for the flow of goods, they're going to be watching the Hill today very closely.
Yes, we all will. All right. Marketplace's Gregory Warner. Gregory, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York today is auctioning off about $1.5 billion worth of toxic mortgage bonds it bought from bailed out insurance giant AIG. A lot of investors are interested, which got us wondering, why would the assets that were so undesirable during the financial crisis now be worthy of a bidding war? From New York, here's Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith.
In the depths of the financial crisis, the Fed bought nearly $16 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities from AIG. Most of those bonds were backed by subprime mortgages, and they became known as toxic assets. But yesterday's toxic is today's hot deal. AIG offered to buy the mortgage bonds back from the Fed, and the Fed turned them down. It thinks it can make more money selling them to the highest bidder. Dan Nigro is the CEO of Warfield Consultants.
People fight over these, and they have been crying for supply.
These are still risky investments, but Nigro says investors, like hedge funds, believe these bonds will pay high interest rates and rise in value as the housing market recovers.
They have value even as toxic securities because there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
The sale is part of the government's efforts to unwind the extreme measures it took during the financial crisis. The Fed and the Treasury have hundreds of billions more in toxic assets to sell. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Retail sales slowed a bit last month, according to a survey by MasterCard Advisors Spending Pulse. The survey predicts higher gas prices and a later Easter this year will hamper sales a bit more. Investor service Moody's, meanwhile, says it could downgrade Toyota's credit rating because of production disruptions in Japan.
The price of gold is at a record high, $1,457 an ounce. Now, gold is seen as a hedge against inflation, and the latest rise in price follows yesterday's move by the Bank of China. The bank raised interest rates for the fourth time in less than 6 months to fight inflation.
We don't have any inflation in our numbers at Marketplace.org in the numbers section.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, April 6th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Radio Chio.
I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter as well, at Jeremy Hobson. Libyan rebels report heavy fighting today on the main road that runs parallel to the Mediterranean coast. Those opposition forces are fighting off advances by those loyal to Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. And if that weren't enough, the opposition is running out of cash. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The rebels say the situation is desperate. Oil sales have collapsed. There's an asset freeze by the US, Europe, and others. Very little revenues coming into Libya. The rebel-held territory is a cash economy with hardly any cash. The banks will be empty in 2 weeks. Thousands of workers may go unpaid. Albrecht Ritschl is with the London School of Economics. He says the rebels will even be hard-pressed to create their own new currency.
Apparently, they don't even seem to have a money printing press there. So just imagine the technical difficulties of printing money if you don't have the technology.
He says they may soon have to resort to bartering. The rebels have called on the US and Europe to send them some of the billions they've frozen. Gaddafi and his supporters, meanwhile, are sitting pretty in monetary terms. They have access to the Libyan central bank's ample reserves of gold and dollars. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Satellite TV provider Dish Network won a bankruptcy auction for Blockbuster. The video rental chain found it couldn't compete with the changing movie rental landscape. The same is true, basically, for MySpace, which has an open house of sorts today for about a dozen interested parties who may buy the website. What those parties will see is a social network that's lost a lot of money and lost a lot of web hits. Henry Blodgett runs Business Insider. He's with us now from New York. Good morning.
Hi there.
What kind of company is going to want to buy MySpace?
I think that's a very good question. There's no obvious buyer. This is a company, MySpace, that has just cratered in the last few years, and its cratering shows no sign of slowing. So there are probably portals like Yahoo or game companies or entertainment networks that see some value in it, but it's certainly not obvious from the outside.
What happened to MySpace?
MySpace was an early leader in social networking. I think they took too long to realize the Facebook threat, and the site became very much entertainment-oriented and very young. And once Facebook had blown past them, they didn't have an answer for that.
Is the global attention span, Henry, coupled with the technology advances, making sort of a website's shelf life much shorter these days?
There's no question that in this industry there have been extraordinary lead changes over the past 15 years, and I wonder if that will ever settle down, because we've seen AOL and then Yahoo and then Amazon and then Google and now Facebook have just taken over the lead in the industry. I don't think that will be permanent. I think there will be some leaders that eventually emerge and build great long-term businesses, but they certainly have been few and far between thus far.
Henry Blodgett from Business Insider in New York. Henry, thanks.
Thank you.
Applications for mortgages fell 2% last week, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. That's despite lower home prices and a slew of homes, including foreclosures, on the market.
Well, a lot of those foreclosures are vacant houses, unsecured and a haven for crime. So real estate agents who oftentimes enter those homes by themselves are thinking a lot about personal safety. From foreclosure-heavy Florida, Tracy Samuelson reports.
When you think of dangerous jobs, you think policemen, firemen. But real estate agent?
When you're ready, come up on the target, get ready to pull the trigger.
Weird. That was Stephanie King being coached through her first time firing a gun. She's on Florida's Gulf Coast in a class that's the first step to getting a concealed weapons permit. Because lately things have been a bit dicey on the job, King works for a broker who specializes in distressed properties. Just recently, she was alone on a visit to a vacant house with a graffiti-tagged barn.
You don't know what's waiting for you inside a property that's been sitting vacant for 2 or 3 years. And so I spent the whole time on the phone just so that somebody knew, you know, where I was if something happened.
Given the glut of foreclosed homes on the market, realtors across the country have a tough choice to make. Work with vacant and potentially dangerous listings or lose out on business. Melanie Johnson is another broker taking the class.
Just about everything I've sold in the last few years has been either a short sale or a bank-owned.
Of those sales, half were vacant. In Florida, one in every 7 home loans was in foreclosure at the end of 2010. Nationally, a whopping 39% of existing home sales were distressed properties. So while it's certainly not for everyone, that has a subset of realtors looking to pack heat.
My saying always is, get the training you need today to save your life tomorrow.
Weapons instructor Joe Naples is a former policeman. He says empty houses attract vagrants, and that can pose a real threat for realtors. Of course, carrying a gun is a huge responsibility. Other realtors turn to mace or tasers. And Johnson says while the class was a good start, she'd like a bit more practice before toting a gun in her purse.
It's not quite as shocking when it first goes off and it's boom and the power and everything. But it makes you think a lot how you really hope you never have to use it.
In Palmetto, Florida, I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Now to the wonderful and bubbly world of dish soap, Steve.
Bubbly, yes.
Consumer Reports has just tested out 14 different dish soaps,
yeah,
from the $2.10 Ajax right up to a $15 bottle called The Laundress.
$15 for a bottle of
That's true.
Wow.
And the magazine found that they all worked equally well at cleaning dishes. Doesn't matter the price. There's no difference, Steve. So I guess you can finally scratch fancy dish soap off the list of things that you use to impress your friends with.
You know what works well with dishes, washing dishes?
What?
Water. You don't even need soap.
That's
right. Just wash it off.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, April 6th in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. 3 of the nation's largest cell phone companies are launching a test run for mobile payments in Utah. AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon will let riders of Salt Lake City's transit system pay for tickets with their phones, in the hopes that we can all pay for all kinds of things with our phones soon.
For more on mobile payments, let's bring in Marketplace's Steve Henn. He's with us now from Silicon Valley. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this seems like a no-brainer, Steve. I mean, my maps are on my phone, my email's on there. Why shouldn't my credit card be?
Well, people have been paying with mobile phones in Japan and Europe for ages, so the technology's all there. The biggest problem in the States is that there are literally millions of retailers who would have to buy new credit card processing machines that could talk to your phones before this can happen. And they're worried about fees and those fees going up. So, you know, it's a huge market. Lots of people want to crack it. There's something like $3.5 trillion in payments made each year with plastic. But getting the retailers to spend the money to buy new machines is the big hurdle.
And who are the players, Steve, who want to get into this game of mobile payments?
Well, you know, at times it feels like pretty much everyone. Google, Apple possibly could get into it. There are startups like Bling Nation, established companies like Verifone. Even Jack Dorsey, the co-founder of Twitter, has a startup that would turn a phone into sort of a virtual cash register. His company is called Square, and Dorsey thinks within a generation, cash could almost disappear.
I use cash less and less. For instance, I locked myself out of my apartment last night, and I was expecting to have to go rumble up some cash and go to the ATM, but I was delightfully surprised that my locksmith took Square, so I could just pay with my credit card, and it was completely secure.
Completely secure, he says, Steve, but obviously that would be a big question. Is it going to be secure to use your phone as a credit card?
Well, that is a big question, you know, and it's one of the biggest challenges for the industries. Dorsey's company, Square, has been accused of being hackable by people who can convert his little credit card reader into a machine that would just steal your credit card information. Cell phones generally are pretty insecure devices. They talk to lots of different things, wireless networks and cell phone towers. And security experts I've talked to said this is really going to be the biggest challenge for this industry, figuring out how to really lock down a cell phone and make it safe.
Marketplace's Steve Henn joining us from Silicon Valley. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Today, the battle for pro football kicks off in a courtroom in Minnesota. NFL players say the league is a monopoly. How the judge decides will determine whether the owner's lockout can continue. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports advertisers and networks are drawing up contingency plans if the TV pigskin goes bye-bye for a while.
Sunday Night Football brings in tens of millions of viewers. Easy. America's ready. Set the big boys free. 'Cause the NFL rocks on NBC. It also rocks on CBS and Fox. Advertisers throw $3 billion a year toward pro football. That's around 4% of total TV advertising in the U.S. Bill Carroll is vice president of Katz Television Group.
The NFL is the most significant way in which both advertisers and the networks are reaching younger men.
Carroll says some advertisers are planning to buy time on traditional primetime shows. Sports economist Craig Depkin says fans will still want to watch athletes, just other ones.
This could lead to boons for college sports or for other professional sports that we're not watching right now. Things like soccer, perhaps.
If only soccer could figure out how to take more commercial breaks. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, despite a sour economy, Jeremy, people are spending more money than ever on their pets.
Really?
This is according to the latest survey, yes, from the American Pet Products Association. Hmm. Now, an average of 15% of pet owners, I love this statistic, said their dog's or their cat's medical treatment would take precedence over their own.
Really?
Yes. They're that loyal.
It's
the
best
owner.
Friend.
Yeah, it's the owner that's loyal to the pet. Now, veterinary care will rise to a whopping $12.2 billion this year. It's a lot of money. You know what's also expected to be higher?
What?
Gift spending for Fido.
Really?
Expected to be 30% higher this year.
So forget that. Maybe people are buying their dogs fancy dish soap.
Oh, my gosh.
Connect. It all comes back together.
It does.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.